Sarah. What's up, everybody? Happy Sunday. What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Darius J.
And I'm Stevie Neal.
And it's your girl, Mella G.
With special guests,
Aquania Escarne.
And this is
Conversate.
Let's talk about it.
And we up. All right. And it's stuck.
Stuck in.
Another happy landing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
we did it.
We it's did. Like, we did that.
It's up like Cardi B.
Oh my God.
Welcome to Conversate. This is our lives, and we will get further into our lives by asking how you living. And we'll start with our special guest. How you living, Aquania?
Everything's great. I'm having a good time, and this has been a great conversation so far. You guys are hilarious.
Oh man. What'd you get into this weekend?
Actually, I got into a Bitcoin virtual conference. It was the 2021 Blockchain Summit, and it was supposed to be in person on Howard University's campus, but due to the current events, we decided to go all virtual, but I was amazed. I didn't know as much as I do about Bitcoin and the blockchain technology until I tuned in for 3 days straight. And I was really impressed by what the speakers had to say on the power of blockchain technology and Bitcoin and how it could help lower income communities. So learned a lot, and I've been sharing a bit of it ever since.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I think I got some more new questions now.
Exactly. Yes, you've generated more questions.
I'm interested in that and reinserting myself back in things that I lost. I just can't believe I did that.
It's okay. We all make them.
Had yourself some coin and sold it.
Wow. Y'all probably would be talking to me right now. I'd be somewhere on a yacht.
Well, you could be talking to us from a yacht.
From a yacht.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk to us at all, so you're just too good for us now.
No. I still talk to y'all, you know what I'm saying?
Money reveals your real attitude.
Yeah.
How you living, Melody?
I am living refreshed. So last Monday the Monday before, my aunt passed away, and it was a pretty heavy week. I think more so, I guess, I didn't have a super close relationship with her, but you know, when your family is mourning, you're mourning as well. And I think it was just also just the first time I experienced grief with my dad. I think I've experienced mostly everything else with him in the past years of my life. But usually when we get news like this, we're like in different spaces. So we have time to grieve to ourselves and then come together. So it was just interesting kind of seeing him in that dynamic. And it also showed me a lot of things that I lack in my relationship with God. So that was just a very adventurous, emotional week. I would say, I think it all came to a head last Sunday, and I just literally sat in my car and cried and just prayed and just kind of asked God for just new eyes, new perspective, and how I view myself and how I want to continue to just like really go after the gift and the talents that he's given me, because I feel like I've been letting them lay dormant. So this week was more of like a detaching myself from exhausting conversation and people and just really have an opportunity to just really kind of focus on me and God and like be really in prayer about the vision that he's placed on my heart to really kind of not just make more money, but to really glorify him with and make impact. And so this past weekend, I had some time to just do some self-care and just get out of the house. And I bought this book. that I've been reading. It's not sponsored by them, but it's Filmmaking for Dummies, and it's actually written by an award-winning filmmaker, screenwriter, and director. And so I'm learning everything from, you know, kind of refreshing myself with just the filmmaking techniques, but also learning about budgeting and scheduling and casting and what goes into all of that. So now that I have scripts that are written, so it's just now I'm actually learning how to plan and create budgets and raise money and things like that. So I feel really motivated and refreshed, and I'm excited to see what God does with it. I've been talking about these programmatic things for youth and filmmaking and editing. So I'm planning to reach out to a couple of schools and see if I can start some after school activities just to kind of get my feet in the water. I'm already teaching an editing class within my school for certification. So I just want to kind of expand that to youth students, middle schoolers and high schoolers more so, so they can obtain those same skills and possibly get a certification before they even graduate high school, and possibly build a professional portfolio and probably obtain a job right out of high school and have to go spend all these thousands of dollars, you know, trying to learn a trade that you can easily learn online. But there's so many people that have so many different perspectives and stuff. So it's just good to kind of have that hands-on, one-on-one, in-person experience learning it, you know, in time. So I'm excited about it. I have a few things going. So I'm just trusting God and, you know, allowing him to lead and guide me and where he wants me to go. But I really feel, I feel different, and it's a good different. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good, Mel. Yeah, here learning and growing. How you live, Stephen Neal?
Well, my week and a half has been eventful because I have started the 75 Hard Challenge.
Let's go.
That's right. Darius J has done this before. He is actually doing this a second time. I'm doing this for the first time with my wife. So for 75 days, we are going to drink a gallon of water. You know, this is like 16 ounces of it. We are not going to drink. We are not going to cheat from our selected meal plan, which we have selected counting our calories. So we just can't go over. Let's see. We have to do two workouts. One has to be outdoors. So that can get kind of tricky when you're not used to working out at all. So yeah.
I didn't really want to say that.
But it's been great. Like, we have actually found a way. There are a lot of places to walk around where we live. You know, we're right in the backyard of Southwest DeKalb High School, so, you know, like, we walk to the school, we walk back. It's, you know, we have an elliptical and a stationary bike in our house. You know, one of my wife's properties was getting rid of some exercise equipment, and, you know, we were just able to get it. So yeah, man, this is day 10. So, and then we read 10 pages of a nonfiction book. So, you know, not Harry Potter or anything, you know what I mean? Like something like self-help, something, you know, or spiritual or something like that. So we're reading Kingdom Marriage by Tony Evans, together. We're doing it on our Kindle account. So, you know, we have the same account, so we can do our highlights. We can see, oh, you know, she highlighted this, I highlight this. So, so that's pretty much been our week, and just see what progress comes of this. You've seen Darius J. He's gotten some results, some, you know, some gains.
I know, right?
I don't know what you call weight loss. You know,
you'll like his high school self soon.
Hey, man, y'all don't want to see that boy. That boy was dangerous.
So yeah, and you know, I also posted that I got these really cool Crocs. There you go.
You have Crocs now?
Yes, I do. And I'm quite proud of these.
Oh,
wait,
my
hold God. On. Do we have the same color?
Yeah, you remember I texted you there. I said, man, you got the same color I got.
Oh, wow. The deep
Am
green.
I like, did I miss the memo?
Yeah, I mean,
you did. You
wow.
missed
this.
It's because you don't live
Looks
in Georgia.
Like it.
Just because I live in a different state, guys, doesn't mean that you can't communicate.
When would you be able to wear these? Like, what, 2 months ago?
I have size yeah. on right now.
Ah.
Okay.
Well.
Right. I have on Nike. You know, these little nice little.
Oh. Right. Right. Okay.
Nice little right. checkerboard Nikes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You know.
I don't feel left out or anything.
Okay. Yeah. It's I not mean, too late. But,
yeah. I was about to say, it's not too late. Crocs are still selling.
Yeah. You probably get them on sale because it's going to be like super cold up there.
Yeah, you know. Oh, they make it with the fur in it too.
They do.
You
know what I'm
saying?
Oh,
yeah,
like
the fur. Yeah, you can get some gibbets, charms.
Yep, know. Yep.
I yeah, know. My sister has those.
Man, yeah. they're on here.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. I've never.
I didn't think that.
But what are those? Are those horns? Are they like little reindeer
oh,
horns or something?
Yes, they are like little like Loki horns. Mm. I found these on Amazon. They're like handmade, I suppose. I think so. And I just got one for each shoe.
So who you fighting with your feet?
I like that. I like that. I don't know. I'm the Marvel Universe.
Okay.
But that's how I'm living. So how are you living? There he is, Jay.
Living pretty good. Reporting live from Alpharetta, Georgia. yeah, living good, man. I can't complain. You know what I'm saying? Everything's always on the up and up. Went to church for the first time in a long time today.
Hey.
Some people I ain't seen in a minute.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying? School, still been schooling. You know what I mean? That's kind of, school is like, I was like, hey, man, one thing I've learned about college, and especially in the IT space, you know what I'm saying? It's a lot of things that's unnecessary to take. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I'm just like, why do I need 3 language courses? I don't understand it. I won't be using that. I'm just like, that's a lot. That's a, and then the thing of it is, it's like, oh man, that's like 4 credits.
Yeah.
I actually could take another IT elective to broaden the things that I'm trying to learn right now, but you just like, nah, I need you to write me some papers. Because I even told my professor, this is how I passed one of my English classes without not writing a lot of papers. I'm pretty good at convincing people of my way unless they just old school and they just don't like what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I was just like, I talk to people, you know, in the space that I'm trying to get back into. Well, I'm actually trying to go into cybersecurity, but I'm just like, you know, nobody don't really write papers, you know what I'm saying, and that we build schematics and reports and stuff like that. And we, you know, now if you was doing a lot of PowerPoint, I would understand maybe there may be something to do with that. But, you know, this paper outside of the one I written for you, which is very good, and it was an A-plus yeah. paper. I hate writing, but I could do it pretty good. You know what I'm saying? But after that, I gave him that spiel, told him I ain't have to write no more papers. He gave me an A. And I was just like, if all professors was like you, I would be skating through this.
Right.
I was like, but, you know, other than that, it's been good. It's been a lot of learning. Finna go ahead and schedule my 2 certification tests. After I take the certification test, you know what I'm saying, I feel like I'll be ready and able to go ahead and revamp my resume, LinkedIn, and all that stuff. I can put these things on there so I can make myself hireable.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I can go ahead and start getting some of that good old low-level experience. You know what I'm saying? And start from the bottom and climb all the way to the top. And then hopefully one day, big dream scheme, just be a consultant, man. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Be a consultant to teach kids how to get IT certifications, because it's a way to get IT IT ain't necessarily a degree-based thing. That's why I'm not really going to get a degree. I'm just really going to brush up on some things that I need to learn, because technology changes every 4 months now. But I want to be able to teach kids, man, how to, hey, if you want to get out of high school and make some real bread, you know what I'm saying, and put yourself in a space where you can take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. I'd rather them do it like that, because school ain't for everybody, college mm-hmm. especially. So a lot of people go use college as a way to extend high school. You know what I'm saying? You can see it in how, like, so many people go in and they drop out. You know what I'm saying? They don't have any direction. They're just trying to do something to prolong the responsibility that they're going to have to face on the other side, that a lot of schools and stuff don't teach. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Teacher responsibility aspect of just, hey, you know what? You're an adult now. You're going to have to contribute in some way, shape, or form for yourself and for the communities that you're going to be a part of. I like to give them technology. Be like, hey, this is where you could contribute. It may not be exactly what you want to do, but it's something that you can do until you get to the point where you can create that space for you to be able to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
Amen.
But that's how I've been living.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's good to see you outside, you know,
yeah.
At church.
Yeah.
So we're going to get right into it, guys. Yeah. We have Aquania Escarnay here among us. The Purpose of Money podcast. Check it out wherever there are podcasts, basically. And we're going to ask her a series of questions and just talk about financial literacy, guys. You know, we've had maybe one or two other, you know, we were talking about crypto, you know, Kendra
was somebody we had
on before in season one.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're
going to talk about some of that stuff and more. So, yeah, man, let's get this thing started. You guys any questions before?
Oh, I thought you were going to get started with the first question.
I feel like my questions are not superior to you guys. Like, you guys dropped a whole lot of bombs.
So I guess we can start with just, I guess you can just introduce yourself, what your podcast is pretty much about, and kind of how you kind of more like, what I guess, what you do for a living into that space.
Awesome. So I've always been passionate about financial literacy since, I don't know, 16. My dad gave me a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And after that, I just wanted to retire early, build wealth, and help people with their money. And in a few years ago, I started the platform, The Purpose of Money. I launched a website, thepurposeofmoney.com, where I share wealth building tips, especially targeted to help women build generational wealth $1 at a time. And then in 2020, I launched the podcast, The Purpose of Money, because I wanted to also feature entrepreneurship stories. So I feature women entrepreneurs, women who are working and building businesses, who are moms, who are central parts of their family, and they're highlighting different ways that they've been able to create freedom for themselves, more time, and businesses. And that is what I want as many people to do as possible, so we can establish life on our own terms.
That sounds so good.
No, I think that's really beautiful, how passion like that kind of morphed into advice and help for other people who are looking to, I guess, build that generational wealth to improve on their finances. I think, even though we are talking about money, I think money is sometimes a very hard and challenging topic to talk about, because I think it can show insecurities. You're exposed in a way that I think other areas of your life don't necessarily expose you. Because, I mean, if you look at my bank account, most of my money went to eating out. But I've scaled back on that a lot. But I mean, it definitely tells you a lot about your spending habits and where your money is more invested in. So I think even talking about just investment, so like, what did you invest in to kind of just accumulate this education in financial literacy?
So the first thing I did was read. When I was in high school, my dad bought me Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And a lot of people have read this book by Robert Kiyosaki and have walked away wanting to own, wanting to thrive financially, because the book really talks about a story of a little boy or Robert Kiyosaki who has two dads. One is a rich dad, one is a poor dad, but poor in a sense like that work mentality, actively working in order to get income, versus a father who built a lifestyle and extra income and cash flow off of businesses and real estate and residual income, that money that you work to build and then you sit back and you collect. And so I really wanted to do something similar because my dad was an early real estate investor before 2008, and he showed me the power of investing in real estate. So at 16, I honestly took my first paycheck from a retail job and I opened up a Roth individual retirement account. Those are known as IRAs. And I started saving for my own retirement. And I have to admit, when I went to the bank, you know, I'm from Georgia. Back then, my bank was First Union. It became Wachovia. And now I think it's Wells Fargo. But, you know, I walked into this bank and this young white woman was kind of like, oh, this is great. Who told you to do this with your money? You know, she was shocked. She was also amazed, right? And having to explain to her that I read about this and I know this is how rich people stay rich. So I took a $252 check, opened an account, and continued to put whatever I could in that account. When I was a student in high school, I made money from babysitting, and that was pretty much it. I was a student and a babysitter. So I obviously didn't make a lot of contributions in high school, but once a year I would add up all my coins, literally all my change, and then I would make a Christmas deposit. And then when I got to college, again, didn't have a whole bunch of money, but when I had $25 extra from my birthday or $50 from Christmas, I would make a deposit. And then it wasn't until I had a full-time job that I used income from my career to make consistent contributions to the Roth IRA. But that's where I started. I started with investing in an account that grows tax-free while you're working, and then it's non-taxable in retirement. And it's a great vehicle because it allows you to put away a lot of money that can grow and it never be taxable. It's kind of nice. And then I transitioned to real estate investing later. So now I'm a hotel owner. I have ownership in a multifamily syndication. So like 354 apartments in Orlando. And then I'm also, you know, I have a retirement account where I also am saving for my future.
That is amazing. First of all, take one-on-one sessions is the question.
Yeah, because I don't even know how to do that stuff. I'm just like, man, because I remember, like, when I was younger, it was a guy, you know what I'm saying? Me and my brother, we had a, you know, grass-cutting business. And, well, I was probably, right, what, maybe 22? You know what I'm saying? And he was telling us about Roth IRAs accounts and stuff like that. Cause most of the time we get done, we sit on the porch, we kick it with him. You know what I'm saying? Cause he was pretty wealthy. And he was just like, man, you guys should take, you know, a piece of your money and put it in Roth IRAs. I was just like, man, that's, I don't even know what that is. And I wouldn't even know how to go in the bank and ask for that. You know what I'm saying? I was like, I'm young. You know what I'm saying? I got time. But, you know, as we grow up, because just like I tell people, you know, like we are, for the most part, in my family, we've taught just to save. You know what I'm saying? We will never talk to just like, oh, man, build wealth, have your money work for you and stuff like that. Because just like the aspect of wealth managers and stuff like that, you know what I'm saying? Or even getting help, or there's people out there that can actually teach you how to do things. That wasn't even on my radar. I was just like, I just think that's just something that's for that side, and I ain't on that side. I'm on the other side of the tracks. And you know what I'm saying? But now I'm just like, do you feel like it's ever a point where it's too late? Like, especially, you know what I'm saying? Like now?
Never. I think we always have the opportunity to change our habits and to get started. Of course, the earlier, the better, because the more time you have for money to grow, you get to take advantage of what we call compound interest. And every year that interest is piling on top of whatever you did save. And I started small. I started with one paycheck, $252. Then I moved up to a whole $25 a month when I could afford it. So you start where you are. You can start with what you can afford. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's ever too late. I help people start planning for retirement in their 50s when they call me, whenever. But I will say the longer you wait, the more it's going to cost you. You know, saving $100 a month at 16 is definitely going to turn into close to $1 million by the time you're 65. And that's just saving. That's not even if you invested it. But wow. Someone who's 60 trying to save $100 a month, it's not going to work. They need to save thousands or sometimes $500, $600, $700, $800 a month if they want to have the same amount. And not everyone has that once they have a house and kids and other people that depend on them for income. It gets a little harder to just save and invest for yourself. So that's why I really encourage, you know, individuals to start when they're young, to start before their family and put that in their budget so that when they have a family, it's kind of already allocated. It's not something they would be willing to sacrifice because you can borrow for college. You can take out loans for your education. You could take out loans for your kids' education. You cannot get a loan for retirement. And everybody seems to forget that. But there is a reason why you see people working at Walmart and other locations when they're older. And most of the time, it's not because they're bored. It's because they can't afford to retire. So you want to really try to start early so you can avoid a situation where you're not able to retire because you can't afford it.
Okay. All right. I got a little quick hitter here. So let's just say someone's getting started in their journey toward financial, better financial decisions and financial literacy or whatever. A lot among us in our circles maybe do a Dave Ramsey method, you know, Dave Ramsey's methods or, you know, the commuter method or just like taking care of small debts and, you know, snowballing, all that stuff. So what have you found in your financial journey or just or in advising others the best way to go about that, to get on that path?
So I personally think that some of Dave Ramsey's baby steps are very helpful for someone who needs a plan and they're not really sure where to start. He spells it out. He makes it easy and it's memorable. That's why so many people listen to Dave Ramsey. The area in which we disagree is the concept of paying off all your debt before saving and investing in other places. Not everybody can afford to do that. And like I said, if I'm someone who has six figures in student loan debt, I cannot afford to wait until that's paid off before I start to save for retirement. I would end up only contributing to someone else's bottom line, the person collecting the income for my student loans. And I was be setting myself up for failure when it came to retirement. So that's where we disagree. I think you can save, invest, pay off debt at the same time. That's what I did. I had student loans. I had things that I wanted to build, including wealth with my husband. When I first got married, we had goals. We want to get another house one day. We want to have children. We want to have six figures in savings. How do we do that and pay off our debt? One of the things is you set a budget and you put money in your budget specifically towards paying off debt. For some people, that's going to be a couple $100s. For others, it might be more if you've already gotten into credit card debt in addition to student loans and you own a house or a car or some other type of debt. The best thing to do is to try to manage that debt. So if you can, for example, I worked in school and I took out student loans. And I looked for scholarships until I found a scholarship that covered my entire education. It took 2 years. So everyone assumes, oh, you're supposed to look for scholarships your senior year of high school. And if you don't get it, that's it. No, ma'am. You need to keep looking.
Yeah.
I was applying 20, 30 scholarships on all the websites my freshman year. I applied to so many scholarships. When some of them came in, I forgot I had applied to them. And then my sophomore year, I continued to apply. And it wasn't until the end of my sophomore year that I got a full ride. So sometimes it's going to take that grit, that scholarship essay, which honestly, getting thousands of dollars of my education paid for taking a couple of hours to write an essay is the easiest thing that people can do. And yet so many people don't do it. Yeah. Because they're lazy, because they don't have someone who's guiding them or helping them, because they don't think they're a good writer. But there are resources out there to help you. And I feel like this is where parents can shine, because even if you as a parent don't feel you have the skill set to help your children with college essays, because maybe you don't have the education or the background or you're not a good writer, I promise you someone around you is. You can ask people in your church. You can ask, you can hire a tutor. You can go online. You can have other people read the essays. You know, everyone just assumes it has to be all on them. And that's not how it works. The most successful students ask for help. Yeah. So that's what I did, you know, and not having six figures in student loan debt gave me such an advantage. I wish I had none. Some of my classmates had no student loans because parents threw down the money, wrote the check, and told them focus on school. I wasn't that lucky, but I was lucky in that, you know, I wasn't down into debt to the point where I felt I had to take the first job offer that came to me, which a lot of people do. Some people are forced to take that job that's not what they want to do or not paying what they need, because they just need to pay these student loans 6 months after graduation. So, you know, including paying down debt in your budget is key. But at the same time, you have to save too. So finding out how much can you actually put towards savings and not spend it is just as important, because you want to be able to have money when an unexpected bill comes up, a car accident, a home repair, or if like something happens, a medical expense, you know?
Right. So with that, do you have any apps that you would, or any services or organizations that you would refer people to kind of help to effectively manage that debt? I know we talked about Dave Ramsey a little bit, but like, are there any, you know, other programs as well that exist that you feel like kind of will help people be more realistic about how they save money and be able to pay down debt as well?
Yes, there's a really good app called YNAB. You need a budget. And I like YNAB because when you purchase it as an adult, they give a free account to students. So if you're a student and you want to learn how to budget and you want to use the app, you can access it for free as a student. If you're an adult, you might pay the subscription fee, but it is a low cost way to track every dollar. They make you sit down and plan out where your paycheck's going. And then even if you want to spend money on a credit card, you have to show that you have the money to pay it off. So it's not about adding money to credit cards and then asking yourself later, where am I going to get the money to pay for it? It's all accounted for. So as you're spending, you're also showing that you can afford what you're buying. And that's one of my favorites. One of my other apps that I like, if you want to save and you're not sure how much you can afford to save, I started out with Digit, D-I-G-I-T, and Acorns. Both apps have algorithms that literally will track your spending habits, and then they will look at the perfect time to take some of your money out and put it aside for you. And it's all AI. So it knows, because of your spending pattern, that you can actually afford to take that $5 or $10 here or there. They also allow you to set up contributions. If you want to do $10 a month or $20 a week or something like that, they'll take those out too. The other thing I like is they don't allow your accounts to overdraft. So if you are someone that's living paycheck to paycheck and you've tried to challenge yourself by setting up these automatic contributions, if your account is low, they won't take the draft. So they'll wait until you have money in the account to actually take the savings. It is investing. Well, Digit is more like a savings account, whereas Acorns is investing your money. So this has to be money that you are saving, and preferably do not intend to spend, you know, too quickly or consistently, right? Because you're trying to build it up. But they are pretty accessible in that when you do need to cash it out or access the money is there for you.
Yeah, I love Digit. I actually learned about that app. I was listening to another podcast called Jesus and Jaloff. I think Yvonne and I can't think of her other person's name, Yvonne Orji, and I can't think of her other name, but anyways, they have a podcast together and they were talking about like things and I got Digit, so now I'm saving up for like my vacation, and I'm saving. They did like a, well, when I first signed up for it, I didn't know they were doing it. I was like, when did I spend $3.98? I don't remember. And then, so they have like a rainy day. They had a rainy day like thing that was already on autosave. So in the event that I do overdraft, like there's money that I could put back into my account, you know, so I don't get that extra fee. But then I just started like setting up a lot of different other contributions. So I was like, oh, I kind of like how it works because I don't really notice that it's gone because I'm already like spending that same amount of money each month anyway. So it's like, it's kind of helpful because it gets to my goal without me really kind of thinking about it. So that's pretty cool that you actually suggested it.
How could you use insurance to build wealth?
Oh, I love this question. So since 2016, I've been a licensed life insurance producer, meaning I can help you find the right type of insurance to protect your family in the event the worst happens, you die too soon, right? Life insurance is a contract between you and life insurance companies that says when I die, I'm going to pay out this money to your family, to your charitable organization, or to whoever you designate. But it's also meant as another way for individuals to build wealth. It's a guaranteed legacy, right? Because we're all going to die. And they are saying in their contract, when you die, we're going to pay. So most people will invest in life insurance for the pure fact that they want to make sure their family's taken care of. You want to replace the income you're providing. You want them to be able to pay off the house. You want them to be able to afford school. You're going to get a life insurance policy for the amount of money you want to cover those expenses. But if you have additional income, there's a type of life insurance because there's two types. There's term life insurance, which is cheaper. It's more advantageous for the life insurance companies because most people do not die within a term selected. They're normally between 1 year renewals or 30 years. And a lot of people, thank God, they live past the 30-year period. And therefore, the company never pays. And you don't get any money back at the end of that, right? It just expires. Mm. And so we call those, I try to use the analogy apartment lease. You kind of get a contract for the amount of time you think you need coverage. Sometimes people will get covered until their kids are a certain age or until they reach retirement. And then that lease expires and they don't have coverage anymore, but they also don't get that payout. But term is good for anyone on a tight budget. You have a lot of money you need to leave because maybe your kids are young. You got to pay off a house. You want to pay for school, but you don't have a lot of money. You'll invest in term. But for those who have additional cash flow, you might want to look at permanent life insurance. I can call it more like that forever home or forever mortgage, because when you invest in permanent life insurance, it covers you for the rest of your life. It doesn't expire. So you could live another 40 years, 50 years, or 10 years, but they will pay out. But because it's 100% guaranteed they're going to pay it, it's going to cost you more to have it because a life insurance company knows they're going to have to pay this money out. So it does require that you have more cash flow, but in exchange for these policies, you have the potential to earn interest or dividend payments for the money that's in the policies. You have the potential to earn interest that far exceeds that of a regular bank account. And sometimes in some years, the stock market. Money grows safely because in the type that I really like, the universal life policies, it is not invested in the stock market. So you are paid interest based on the life insurance money's performance in the stock market, and the years that they have profitable years, they will take some of those profits and they will pay it out to policyholders in the form of interest. So some years you can earn as much as 12% return on your money. Some years you'll earn 0%. The years you earn 0% is when they have losses in the market. So the good news is if the life insurance company invests money in the market, but then they have losses, they don't pass those losses on to the customers. Instead, they just don't pay interest that year. So I like it because you have the potential to earn a lot of interest, but if the market has a very volatile year, you don't earn any interest, but you don't lose any money either. And a lot of people have used this, what we call cash value that builds up, to invest in other things or to supplement their income in retirement. I personally have used cash value to buy real estate. So I live in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area. It's really expensive to purchase real estate, whether it's for rental or personal use. And so my husband and I use quite a few thousand dollars in our accounts to purchase a home. You can use it to purchase rentals. And this bank, essentially, we call it creating your own bank. It's yours. You have access to this money. You can use it how you want to. And when you invest it in assets that generate higher returns than even that money, then you're making money off of your money, right? Because real estate in the area where I live is out of control. And that's just being generous. You know, what I purchased 5 years ago is almost twice as much money now. It's not quite there, but it's getting there. And the real estate market is not going down. And in the area where I live, it traditionally hasn't gone down. Even in 2008, 2009, most people were still living in the Washington, D.C. area. We have a lot of transit individuals here for college, here for Capitol Hill, here for politics, here for jobs. So our home values do not really see a huge change except going up.
Understandably so.
Yeah. What are some good practical ways to start building wealth from scratch? Like little to no income. You know what I'm saying? Just like a little. Not you don't have like hundreds of dollars to try to get in, but you just got, you know, a little something for maybe the first out of college guy.
Okay, I like it. So if you got a little something, I normally tell people you should probably budget paycheck to paycheck, meaning every time you get paid, create percentages that you can live with. So you know how some people like to tithe 10%, and that's what you do off the top. I would say the same thing. You're going to tithe, you're going to save, you're going to invest, and then you live off the rest. So if you are someone that makes different amounts of money every paycheck, if you use percentages, at least you're consistently saving. So for some people, like when I was a cashier in a retail store, 10% was my number, you know, tithe 10%, save 10%, you know, and then live off the rest. So that way, whether you made $100 this week or you made $50, you're still saving something. And then when your income becomes more consistent, then you can put dollar amounts instead of percentages. So I love to vacation, for example. So when I realized I love to vacation and I want vacations to be a part of my life regularly, then I decided, okay, each paycheck, I need to save $200. And then when I made more money, I increased that. Or when I wanted to take more expensive vacations, I increased that. But you shouldn't put the numbers on your savings numbers each paycheck until you have that steady income and that higher income that you can do that. In the beginning, just try to do percentages. Try to save 10%. Try to invest 5%. Try to not make your housing more than 30%. So sometimes you may need to live with a roommate, right? Because you can't afford an apartment by yourself. Sometimes you may need to rent a room. You know, those are the realities that some people need to think through. And sometimes you want a house hack. Like, believe it or not, my husband and I, you know, from the beginning of our marriage, because he bought a townhouse before we were married, we had a place to live. But my job sent me to Haiti for a couple of years, and he was going back and forth to visit me, but he was still working in the DC area. So when another person who moved to DC didn't know exactly where they wanted to live, we rented out a room to them. And my husband had a roommate for years. And then even when I moved back, we sometimes had someone stay with us in short spurts and they would pay rent. So you can house hack, you know, just because you have a house doesn't mean you have to have all of it to yourself. Some people are happy to rent out the basement or rent out a bedroom and take advantage of that cash flow because we could afford our mortgage on our own, but it was nice to have this extra money that we could save and invest because we had roommates.
Right.
Yep, that makes sense.
Exactly. Yeah, I want my first investment property to be a duplex. So live on the other side and they can rent the other and pay for my money.
And a lot of people do that. And in some places, rent is higher than a mortgage payment. So you're really going to be able to do that.
Yeah. I've definitely benefited from that strategy as well. Renting out a room in our 3-bedroom. And I grew up with my parents. We always did that. My dad even fixed up the attic room and made it into a suite, like an entire suite with a bathroom and everything like that. Rented that out. Then when we moved to a bigger house, we actually built a suite on the side of the house, or had it built when we had a house built, and that continued to earn income. So I definitely have seen the benefit of that personally. So yeah, man. So before we get too much into general financial things, you just ran by us that you own a hotel.
Yeah. How about that?
How people just get surveys in conversation. It's like, I do this too, but you know, anyways.
So what were your inroads into that?
So interestingly enough, because my dad invested in real estate when I was younger and before I got married, I thought that's what I wanted to do too. I wanted to be a landlord, right? So my husband and I had been saving for a few years. We actually lived abroad in Dubai for 3 years and had our house rented, had our housing paid for in Dubai. So we had all the money we would have spent on housing was just going into the bank. And we came back and said, okay, this is the time. Let's get a rental property. Let's get a primary residence. And even was able to help my mom get a house too. So in 1 year, we were able to buy 3 properties. And that was such a blessing. But it was all because of our discipline when we had extra income and opportunity to save, right? And so we buy this property in Philadelphia, or I bought it actually with a business partner, and we have our old house still rented, and then we ended up getting another house for ourselves. Well, let's just say the rental in Maryland pretty much ran itself. The tenants didn't complain. The maintenance was always pretty routine and done, and no issues. The check always cleared. But the Philly property, which was out of state for me, required, you know, 2 to 3 hour drives from the here and there to check on it, started out okay, but then became a headache. Christmas came, rent's not paid, guys making up excuses on why, then all of a sudden something that was perfectly fine yesterday is suddenly broken and they want to fix it for me at a discount on the rent, and oh, now I lost my job. And it was just always something. Yeah. And when you're a landlord, as my dad told me, you have to be able to kick out your own mama. Okay. If your mama's not paying the rent, she got to go because it's costing you.
Sorry, mom, but you got to go.
It costs you every single month when you're not getting rent to pay for that residence. You know, water bills were still coming in, and water can't be in the tenant's name. It had to be in my name, and electricity and all these things are still going out the door, and you got no income coming in the door. So the first eviction that I had to do was heartbreaking because I care, you know? And I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to hire a lawyer to do this, but I literally am losing money and I can't support your family and mine because that's not what I'm here for.
Right.
So when I went through that process, the first thing I had to admit to myself was, this is not what you had in mind. Okay. I had get a new property every 1 to 2 years, have the cash flow coming in, take that cash flow, turn it into more properties. And I wanted to actually be able to sell my rentals to the tenants if they wanted to buy it. I wanted to empower people to become homeowners. And then I have this experience where not only did the person say so many times they wanted to buy the house, but never did, but then ended up being the person I had to evict. And then I got another tenant after them, and we were doing just fine. And then started to happen all over again. It was like Christmas got us every year.
Dang.
So when we started to see the writing on the wall that the second tenant was going to now also need to be evicted, we also had a investor come approach us to buy it because property in Philly is hot. Like it doesn't last long, and it does have really good returns. So when that offer came, we sold it, we got the cash, we broke even, and we kind of just said thank God for that, you know. But me and my partner realized, like, we don't want to do this anymore. We don't want to deal with middle to low income areas providing housing for the cash flow. Rather do something else. So I started to ask questions, like, because I wasn't discouraged from investing in real estate. I just knew I didn't want to do rentals. So I started asking, like, what else can you do to invest in real estate? What other ways can you make passive income in real estate? No headache, no tenants, no toilets. Because I don't want to do toilets and tenants anymore. And a friend of mine was like, who's a realtor, was like, oh, we need more women in two spaces. Well, one space, multifamily syndication. So let me give you a sec to explain what that is. So multifamily syndication are deals where investors come together and they purchase large commercial apartment buildings. So in Georgia, it'd be the place with 200 apartments in it. You know, you got people on different floors, you got your community pool and community room and everything like that, right? And that's pretty much what those are. Most people assume corporations own those, but they're actually owned by groups of investors. And the groups of investors will purchase the property and then they will split the cash flow. So this is rentals on steroids. I was like, oh, you can do that? Like, I had no idea. So when I found that out, and I found out it's a space mostly with white men or male investors, I was like, I want to do that. So I actually had set my sight on being an investor in a multifamily deal. But in 2020, the deal sucked. Like, all of my friends in that space couldn't find a deal that was cash flowing, couldn't find a deal that was profitable, and basically was like, there's nothing out there. So another friend was like, but you can do hotels. And I said, what? She said, oh, it's the same thing. Like, groups of investors buy hotels and then they split the cash flow. But instead of monthly rents, now you have daily stays, right? Check in, check out, cash flow, check in, check out, cash flow.
Right.
So I said, oh, how you do that? So I talked to my friend who's a hotel consultant. Her name is Davon Reeves, and her partner is Jessica Myers, and they have a company called Epic Collective. So they bring investors together to invest in epic deals like hotels. I had them on my podcast. I had them talk about how to invest in hotels, a whole show. And then I still didn't imagine myself being a hotel owner, to believe it or not. And then I joined their email list because I was like, I like what you guys are doing. I want to collaborate again. Let me stay in touch and just see what you guys are up to. But the first email they sent about investing in a Hilton, I missed it. I was busy. Life was crazy. So I missed it. And then the second time they sent the email, I saw it and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. Invest in a Hilton. Yeah, let me see. Click on it, read it, look at the numbers. Then I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I need to ask more questions. And fortunately, which they do this, like whenever you have a deal like that, you have a Q&A for investors. But at that point, we had established a relationship. So I called and was like, tell me more about this deal. What do these numbers mean? You know, how much is the initial investment? And then I talked it over with my husband. And then I was like, okay, I'm going to invest. And they were like, what? Really? And I said, yeah. And I'll bring some other people in with me. They were like, what? So my partner that was invested in Philly with me, she came in on a deal. A sorority sister who's also a client, she came in on a deal. So I brought two other people to the deal, and there's only six of us.
Wow.
So there's six of us in Epic Collective. And then there are another, we partnered with another company that has their own group of investors. So they manage their own investors, but we brought the cash to the table so we could close on the deal. And then we split the profits between the two groups. But it's the same concept. You put your money together, right? Group economics. You put your money together and then you purchase this multi-million dollar piece of real estate. And the good thing about hotels is when you buy a hotel, you're buying the land and you're buying the hotel. And then you also have the brand because we got a Hilton. So it's a Home 2 Suites in El Reno, Oklahoma. And with that brand comes the website advertising, the loyalty people who are like, I only stay at Hilton's. And then location was key. Our hotel is right off the highway. So if you're on a long road trip, you want to take a sleep for the night and you want more space because we're all suites, you come stay at our hotel. And we bought at a discount. So 2020, everybody knows travel industry was impacted. So this was a really good deal.
I bet.
We got it on sale.
Wow.
So that's my long story to how I became a hotel owner, literally by responding to the right email and being curious and open. So networking is key. Yeah. You have to be in the circles where these conversations are happening because they're not advertised on social media. It's not like you could look at a Facebook ad or respond to an Instagram post because that's not how it works. They're not allowed to be posted that way. So you have to follow the people who have the deals. You have to be on their email list. You have to ask questions, you know, and ask them to keep you involved when an opportunity comes along. But more importantly, you have to be financially ready. Like I had my money ready. I just needed a deal. When you have yourself open like that, you could be choosy. You could be selective. You could make the best risk for you, take the best risk for yourself because you're financially prepared.
That's really amazing. I never knew anything like that. I mean, I know about like just like the multifamily syndication, but from a hotel perspective, I didn't think about it like that.
Me neither.
Yeah, definitely. If I'm taking a road trip on Route 66 or something like that, I'll definitely try to work your home too into my route.
Thank you. We appreciate you in advance.
Oh, my goodness.
I appreciate your contribution to the cause, my friends.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, man.
And it's better now. COVID is still amongst us, yet the travel industry has rebounded. So
we are
benefiting from that as well. I've been
traveling, so I know.
Yeah, as have I. Yeah. Definitely. We all been traveling.
Right.
I kind of thought about while you were talking, just other opportunities that group economics could take advantage of. Are you in circles or are you invested in like franchising and stuff like that? Like what do you know about that?
I do. So I hosted a panel in January of, was it this year or last year? I can't remember. I've hosted educational topics about franchise ownership. I've had franchise owners on my show because I do believe and stand by that they're good business strategies. You literally are given a blueprint and then they're just telling you to execute it. And no franchise is going to give you their blueprint unless they think you're going to be successful in the area where you're trying to franchise. Normally. Because they spend a lot of time doing research, making sure that you're going to be successful. So they look good, right? So they're not going to let you build daycares just anywhere. Sometimes you have to go to certain areas that meets the criteria of the franchisor.
Yeah.
So with that said, I do believe they're great wealth building strategies, especially for Black people who want to be in a business and they don't have an original idea. And franchises tend to do be more successful than individual organic ideas because they have the brand behind them, because they already have a customer base, because they did all the research and they know that this product will sell in this area, right?
Yeah.
So it's a great strategy. I personally do have franchise ownership on my list of things that I want to accomplish, but I haven't done it yet. But it is something that's been on my mind. But when you're looking at franchises, you really have to decide a couple of things. What do you want? What industry do you want to be in? Is that something that you're going to have to work in or you can work on? Because there are some franchises that will require the owner to be on the premises working in the store. And that's not my life. Right. I have too many, things going on, right?
So Chick-fil-A is out then.
Exactly. Right. Chick-fil-A is one of those franchises. Like I was like, oh, I'd love to own a Chick-fil-A. And then they were like, yeah, so we want you to be in the store. We want you to be, you know, present with the employees and the customers on a daily basis. Nah, that's not going to work. right? Yeah. So that's what you have to kind of think through. And then, you know, do you want to be in child education, you know, like the math tutoring programs or the science Brainiac stores or even the music stores? Like, you can do some of those things and you know they'll be pretty successful because people continue to have kids and they want them to be in activities and they want them to be smart and they want them to be good at math. Mm-hmm. Or do you want to do food, right? Which COVID impacted a lot of the food sectors if they weren't takeaway ready, you know? Mm-hmm. So are you picking an industry that can do well if you go to takeout only kind of atmosphere? So that's one of the reasons why I haven't gotten into franchises, but I definitely have it on my radar. And there are different price levels to get into franchise ownership, but some of them are pretty low. Like, you might find a couple out there that are 10 to 25,000. And then you'll have others that require a million, like McDonald's requires at least a million. So it really just depends on what you're interested in.
So we talked about franchises. We talked about Roth IRA and family syndication as ways to build that passive income, that generational wealth. What are some other things that you feel like people don't really think about often that can also do the same, that it's not like on your radar?
So I'm going to say this, and I'm prefacing it because I don't want to think, I don't want you to think I'm not answering your question, but I want everyone here to know you do not have to be an entrepreneur. You do not have to start a business to become a millionaire. Okay. You can become a millionaire by working in a career that pays you money. Doesn't even have to be well. There are some people who get $50,000 to $60,000 a year, which $50K is the median income for most of America. And they save really well in their 401Ks. So if you are disciplined enough to save in your employer retirement account, and then you get the benefit of matching contributions from your employer, that's AKA free money from your job. Every time you make a contribution, they make a contribution. By doing just that regularly and as much as possible, which most jobs will allow you $19,500 a year as of 2021 for a 30-year career, you can amass millions of dollars in wealth. And I say this because so many people assume they have to do a business, but then they don't have business acumen or they don't have an interest to be a business owner. And entrepreneurship is not for everybody. It's nice. And it definitely, history has shown, if you want to be self-made really quickly, entrepreneurship is a great way to get there. But you do not have to pursue entrepreneurship to build wealth. I started my career in the U.S. government, and we have a retirement account that's really good. It doesn't have a lot of options, but the options that it has, if you're invested in the right ones, it tends to do really well. And we have 75,000 TSP millionaires, the Thrift Savings Plan millionaires, and the average salary for the people who are TSP millionaires who work for the U.S. government is about $65,000 a year. Some of them made more. Some of them made six figures in their career, but most of them didn't. They just prioritized investing for their future. So that's what I want to say. And that's something people don't talk about.
No, that's beautiful. I think because you don't have that six figure, or some people feel like you don't have that six figures, or you don't have the salary that you desire. Like, there's no way. I mean, and then you make a good point too. Like, not everybody's cut out to be an entrepreneur. You know, I think it's just being effective with what you have.
Absolutely.
That was good. Drop one on me then. You know what I'm saying? Thought I'm gonna have to go back to the trap.
Oh my gosh.
Keep going to school, Brett. Keep going to school.
Please.
Hey man. I wanted to ask a couple questions about, just to see what you thought about the old Bitcoin thing. Did you learn anything from your whole little weekend session of this and see that there's any insight to the Bitcoin game You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people, it's hard to get their minds wrapped around. So it was like, so this money is more invisible than the fiat currency to deal with. So
yes. So I'm laughing because I am one of those people who, if it's a proven track record, it makes sense. That's what I want to do, right? So invest in that 401k, get that Roth IRA, have an emergency fund. These are things that I can understand. We have a value on the US dollar. We know what it's worth. And we know that the stock market is cyclical and on an average of every 10 years tends to perform. Bitcoin is new to me. And I'm going to say, I'm not ready to mortgage my house after attending this conference and put it all on Bitcoin. but I am looking at the technology and the possibilities that it can provide to economies across the world. Because as long as you have an internet connection, which most people now have thanks to a cell phone, you can buy and trade Bitcoin in exchange for services, art. And so I was really impressed by the technology that they're creating to protect digital artists and how you can use cryptocurrency as a form of payment and protection. You don't transfer the digital art until you're paid. And when you're paid, you transfer it and it's safe and it's secure. And then having the ability to see that the trail of that technology hasn't been broken. You know, there are a lot of theories that Bitcoin could be the key to eliminating the wealth gap because there is no ability to be racist in the Bitcoin system. When you're buying and trading, nobody knows what race you are. Sometimes they don't even know who you are because people are purchasing through wallets that are fully anonymous. But I do see that there's room to grow. We definitely need to continue to educate our people and about the pros and the cons. Because one comment was made like, write down the instructions on how to access your Bitcoin so that people can access it. Because it's so anonymous for some people. You can't even get to it without the 16-pin password and, you know, things like that, that it just complicates things, right? But it's to keep it safe. That's part of the technology and its power. So what I will say is I am curious enough to keep learning. I actually started a book, if I can do book reads. One of my friends wrote a book called From Bars to Bitcoin, and he's sharing his story of how, you know, he was a youth going to college and then he took a turn, right? But he, his name is Justin Riedrich. He got on PATH again after 3 years in prison. But after getting out of prison, he couldn't access a bank account like everybody else. He didn't have access to credit. He wasn't in the system for 3 years to have credit. And so when he came out, he's trying to get a job. He's trying to provide for his family. And he doesn't have access to anything but Bitcoin.
Wow.
And Bitcoin couldn't discriminate against him because he had a record. Bitcoin was open and accessible to him. And so I see the power and I see other Black men who have gone through the prison system. And this is their only way to produce wealth until they can establish themselves. So when I hear stories like Justin's and I process so many ways in which the Black community has been disadvantaged for decades, I see the power it has, but we're just skeptical.
Yeah.
Because we're like, last time we hopped on the bandwagon, the boat.
that boat started to ride.
We ended up in 400 years of slavery. So I see it. I get it. And so I'm one of those people. This is what I'm going to say. Invest what you can afford to lose. Okay. Yeah, so if that's $100 a month, then that's it. Okay. But don't mortgage your house. Don't sell your car. Don't put it all on Bitcoin and then be upset when it doesn't win for you, because at the end of the day, Bitcoin is still a commodity that is valued based on what other people think it's worth.
Yeah.
And so today we think it's worth $42,000+. And tomorrow we might think it's worth 10 cents. So only invest what you can afford to lose.
Exactly.
Yeah, the market can definitely be fickle, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it hurts your feelings.
I'm trying to tell you. I mean, we just saw a few months ago a bunch of Redditors basically raise American Multi Cinema from the dead. You know, basically GameStop. That's right. Yeah, just gave them the cash flow they needed to basically float themselves through this time, just on opinion of their business. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's long term, and that's why I feel like invest what you can afford to lose, double your money or however you do it, and then you can take out your principal and just keep working with that interest, right? Right. It's a strategy that works, and it doesn't require you to sacrifice money you do need to live or to retire.
So, because it's like, I'll be looking at it and I'll be like, man, this thing is capping over $1 trillion or something like that. And I'm just like, damn, pretty good. And then you see like his other coins like Ethereum and Ethereum Cash and all that stuff like that, you know. And I was just like, you know, it's just as volatile as the stock market. That's like you said, it's all opinion. It's really opinion based on how people feeling. That's how the stock market operates. It's like it's fear involved, is famine involved, is natural disasters involved, and stuff like that. That's how all these things work. You know what I'm saying? And I was just like, man, because even like Dogecoin, that was just like a thing. People were like, yeah, everybody go buy some Dogecoin. You know what I'm saying? Get you a couple of dollars and do this thing. And then, you know what I'm saying, Dogecoin never got off the ground. Little dog rocket didn't even have no fuel in it.
I'm done.
I think that's what they call the pump and dump.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Because there's some people that made some money off of it, but that's exactly what it was for. It was used as just a bait way to just get everybody to put some money in it so they can get some money out of it. You know what I'm saying? And then a lot of people didn't yield no results. You know what I'm saying? And I just like, I knew that was the case. But, you know, Elon Musk now, you know, just like old Warren Buffett. Hey, once he got people afraid of buildings falling down, he was able to make millions off of millions and billions off of insurance. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, earthquakes happen and it shake your buildings to death. You lose all your money. So I got this insurance that'll cover these buildings.
Oh my gosh.
But I live in New York. Yeah, you know, I'm just saying science says that it could happen. Did you see 2000? Did you see 2012? Ice came everywhere, and, you know. Well, I mean, that's how he basically did it. That's how he made money through cities. Like, he was just like, you got to insure this building because things happen. Look at 9/11 and stuff like that and how that happened.
So fear. Berkshire.
Fear so will get people to do crazy things.
Yeah.
So you got Berkshire Hathaway financing movies? Is that what you're saying?
Hey, man. hey man, the man's smart. He'll penny pinching man pay himself a dollar on paper.
Oh my gosh. But Darius mentioned Elon Musk, so I wanted to ask you about being a Tesla owner. I know you got one. Put it all on the Instagrams and such. So what is your opinion on that market? It's still pretty new. How are you experiencing it practically, you know, just making the switch? This is something I'm very interested into. I have an electric car as well, but yeah.
Oh, okay. So this is not an endorsement by Tesla. They are not sponsoring this episode.
But if you do want to.
More than welcome.
Personally, I love my Tesla. And so truth be told, I wanted to get my husband a Tesla for his 40th, but my business didn't grow to the extent that I wanted it to by the time his birthday came around. So we had to take another year to get it together. But once we hit that number and I like paid off stuff, moved stuff around, eliminated a lot of bills, I even refinanced my house because the rates were so good. We saved $700 by doing that. And then I was like, oh, I have all this, not all this extra cash flow, but I have more than enough now that we can comfortably take on ownership of a Tesla financially. But the benefits of having a car that I didn't have to gas when the gas prices went up, that's priceless. My husband used to drive an Infiniti and it used to be at least $46 to $50 to fill up his tank. Now my electric bill is probably only $100 more than it used to be for the month.
For the month.
And then that's probably being generous because it's just really not that high. I thought I was going to see all these crazy changes in my electric bill and I have not. Secondly, I have another car that's a Ford and it's not electric and we barely drive it now, mostly only when we need to carry more passengers. It's really efficient on road trips, but by far it's the smoothest ride I've ever had in a car. Aside from all the amenities, I don't feel the bumps on the road, the potholes. It's so quiet. It kind of hums. The sound system is amazing. And I just like that you can stream the good music. So 1990s R&B, 2000 hits. Like, I don't listen to the radio anymore because some of this music, I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. Like, I don't know what straightening and straightening and straightening is, right? But
hey, man. When I heard that song, I'm like, yo, like, is this what he's saying?
What is this?
Oh my God.
I just couldn't. I had to Google it just to make sure that I heard him right. And then I was like, so that is the complexity of the lyric. Okay. So I love the sound system, the music, the options. But it's the ride for me. It's just a nice, smooth ride. And great for long road trips because you can just put on that cruise control or what did my husband call it? Advanced auto drive or whatever.
And it drives itself.
That's a feature you have to pay more for, but the feature that comes with the car is pretty close. Close. I don't let my car drive itself. I do always have my hands on the steering wheel and I'm making sure that I am alert at all times. However, it's really nice to not have to keep your foot on the pedal electric or the gas because the advanced auto driving feature adjusts the speed based on the traffic you're in. So it sets a maximum speed. And then if you have people jump in front of you, it slows down and you're just sitting there holding the steering wheel like.
I kind of have that for my car.
Yeah, I love it.
It's dope.
I'm going to get a Tesla.
Yeah, I've always wanted a Tesla though.
And Mella, if I'm not mistaken, it's a model. She has a Model X.
No, why? Have a Model Y.
Why? Oh man, even better for me.
Because I want a Model X.
I wanted a Model X ever since I seen a dude on the highway with his feet kicked out the window. drinking a Pepsi.
No, he was not.
Yes, he was. That joker hit the signal light. That car moved over. His feet was out the window. I was like, I want one of them.
So you can hang your feet out the window.
No, he was sipping the Pepsi just like this. And he's like, and the car moved over, his feet still out the window. He didn't touch the steering wheel. And I was just like, that's amazing.
Can you control your car? Like, can you bring your car to you?
No.
No. Okay.
No, not yet. Maybe the next bottle. Maybe I'll spring that next time.
In Atlanta traffic, that was amazing to see to me. I was just like, you know what? This is amazing.
Especially in Atlanta traffic.
Exactly. I was like, he ain't dead yet or nothing. He's just out here living his best life. He didn't even have shoes on. Had bare feet. That's how you know he trusts that Tesla.
Yeah, I like it. I was like, do we need to trade in this for? But we can't have two electric cars. Not yet. Not yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Everyone's not there. So this summer, my best friend lost her grandmother, and her grandmother's from New York, but spent a lot of her time in Beaufort, South Carolina. So my mom comes with me because I've been best friends with this, my best friend since fifth grade. So we're all like family. So my mom was like, I got to go to the funeral. So we'll drive. I said, well, mom, we'll drive. So she flies up from Florida to DC and I'm Googling charging stations between here and Beaufort. And there's no stations in Beaufort. And I'm like, yeah. How is this going to work? I want to take the Tesla, but then how am I going to charge? I'm at a hotel. Yeah. Hotel's like, we can't help you and we don't have charging stations. I'm like, oh my God. So that's where it gets kind of tricky, is you got to do a little bit more planning on the road trips. Make sure you can charge wherever you're going. And if you're going to a small town that's not up for the tourist, you know, electric car thing yet, you find yourself not being able to take your electric car. So I ended up doing a road trip with the Ford, which my mom was grateful because she was terrified. She was afraid to drive the Tesla, but also because I wasn't sure that I'd be able to get home.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, definitely. It's just definitely something to watch. I just love that now more and more people are buying into it. But we still, like, a lot of us don't know somebody with an electric car. You know what I mean? To even ask about, okay, my next car, would I make it an electric car? So I'm trying to develop a podcast around electric cars. You know what I mean? So that more people can know someone with an electric car. Because I think there are some clear benefits to having them. I'm not saying the whole world has to switch, because obviously the infrastructure isn't there yet.
Yeah.
But for some people, like with simple commutes, like what I find myself in is that my commute was very workable with the car, especially with the car that I have. I have a late model Nissan Leaf. So the savings are just ridiculous. I had like a Chevy Venture before and I was filling that up, you know, on a, what, 25 mile one way commute, you know, 50 miles round trip 5 days a week. To an electric car. And like you said, it's like plugging in a washing machine or something. Mm-hmm. It's really not, you know, the jump that people think it is. And there's just all kinds of tips and tricks to maximizing the mileage as well. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Just based on how you drive and where you're driving. So yeah, you know, a little plug there. I know you had a Tesla and you know what I mean? I just wanted to get into that. And, you know, Mello likes Teslas. So.
Yes. So I love where the industry's going, and I am hopeful that more people will get it. And that's one of the reasons why I shared that I have a Tesla on social media. It wasn't just to brag that, like, I got a Tesla, but it was like, I'm a Black woman. I have a Tesla. I take it on road trips. This is what I do. Like, basically sharing some of my tips. And then being transparent when I'm like, well, can't go to Beaufort with it because, you know, so people understand that this is not perfect. It doesn't have, it's not prevalent everywhere just yet. And it's true. I went to Beaufort. I saw one Tesla and it was on its way out. So of the town, and I was coming in. So I was like, yeah, I guess they don't have a lot of Teslas here.
Right.
Yeah. They probably plugged in at like their auntie's house or something. They triple charged it for like a day or something.
Yeah. Cause I know I can't take that about my hometown. I'll tell you that. About
I'm telling you right now. Ain't nothing in just a
yard ornament. You know what I'm saying?
It's gonna be a photo shoot magnet, basically.
Yeah,
because everybody's just gonna come to your yard and take pictures with the test.
Because even one thing I noticed, like the other day, like it stopped at a rest stop. They are even having charger stations installed at rest stops now, like, you know, like rest stop areas and stuff like that. So it's coming along and stuff like that. And a lot of truck stops and stuff like that are now having charging stations. And I know the Hilton has a lot of charge stations at their hotels and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's coming along. It's just, I'm just like, man, I'm gonna miss the way a V8 sounds when it all switch over.
Yeah, that's like, man, that's over once you.
No, you won't. Yeah. That's just like back in the day. I used to be one of those people that said, no, I love books. I'm never gonna get a Kindle. And then I got a Kindle and was like, oh my God, where have you been all my life? Who needs to turn pages?
All these books in one place? Look
at this. And now I cannot, it's a mental block. I cannot finish paper books. But you put it on the Kindle, you just swipe, swipe, click, click. And then I got into audiobooks. It's like a progression here. You can see.
Yeah.
Once you adopt the technology, then you're all in, right? So first I wouldn't give up books. Then I got a Kindle. Then I wasn't willing to give up my Kindle, and I wanted, but I wouldn't listen to audiobooks. I was like, no, I can't focus. I won't be able to take notes. Now I'm like, oh, is that not in an audiobook form? Can you make it an audiobook form if you want me to read it? So it's a progression, but once you get there, you fall in love and you're like, oh, this is what this is like.
Yeah. So convenient.
Mm-hmm. Hey, and if you know somebody who's trying to get a book read and made into an audiobook, I would like to read it.
Will send you an email. I have someone.
Oh, all righty then.
Okay. Thank you very much. When you put yourself out there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a connector. Yeah. That's my gift. I can't promise you they'll hire you, but I will connect you.
Yeah.
Hey, man. Steve got the studio set up in the background, baby.
I'm already ready. Let me put my headphones on.
Yeah,
man. That's dope. You know what I'm saying? So, you know.
Hey, man. So, Aquania Escarnet, thank you very much.
Thank you so much
for stopping by. And having your listeners check us out. And I'm sure our listeners will check you out on The Purpose of Money. It is on everywhere you get your podcasts. Well, you know, most of you, you know, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. Great tips, great episodes. So check her out.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you.
So we have come to the point of the program where we give our final thoughts, just a point from the podcast or just something you come up with that you want to highlight and you want the people to know to kind of cap off the episode. So we're going to get into our final thoughts. We're going to start with our special guests. Final thoughts, Aquania.
Hey, this is September is Life Insurance Awareness Month. So if you do not have life insurance, I want to encourage you to get covered right now. Make sure your family's taken care of in the event you die too soon. Thanks.
That's a good one.
That was a good one.
Right, yeah.
Made me want to get some.
Right. That's how, just like a commercial. I'm just like, you know what?
I was like, I do need life insurance. But
indeed,
final thoughts, Bella G.
This was really good. I think super helpful, especially as I'm being more intentional about my finances and tithing and saving efficiently and effectively. I think last year, moving up here to New Jersey has helped me do that because I don't have much of an overhead because I stay with my dad. So I was able to pay off all of my credit card debt, be able to save a lot more effectively, put a lot of money to the side that I don't see. But I think in this episode, it's definitely opened my eyes to a lot of other things, too, that I can start investing in as well. Individually, I've already been talking to my dad about investment property, so I was already kind of aware of that. But I think there's also conversations that we had today, too, that kind of opened up my eyes and my curiosity to, you know, invest in other types of properties as well. So I'm actually excited to expand my money, ask more questions, you know, do my research and just do it, you know, especially now that I'm 30, you know, so maybe 30, 40 years from now, I can, you know, see that the benefit of that. So I would say, I hope that those are listening, whether they listen to it this live or in the audio form, that they were able to take some tips from this. And, you know, Aquania stated earlier that it's never too late, you know, so start now while you have that opportunity. And
start investing while you still got knees like Megan.
You were doing so well.
I was.
Unchecked. That family rating. That little box, the little check box, gone.
If you don't have knees like Megan, it's too late.
That E is gonna get slapped right out of here. No, too late. Too late.
If your knees start creaking and you can't do for 3 seconds, you might be on the edge of investing. So if you still got them young knees, start investing now. It'll benefit you in the long run.
Is that your final thoughts?
No, I'm sure it isn't.
I can't.
Oh man. Final thoughts, Stephen Neal.
Well, this has been a refreshing conversation. It just encourages me on my journey with like home ownership. Me and my wife, we right now have a fixer upper. We have rented a room. We have some plans for it. We're almost finished paying back my dad the money. So we're going to have a lot of options when that comes. So yeah, definitely giving me some ideas on where to go with it when we have it outright. And so I would just say, if you have maybe, you know, people have different assets that they can work with, I would say just start exploring what either you have yourself or collectively in your circle. You know, we talked about group economics. You know, start having those conversations if you're not, or, you know, start engaging in conversations you know about, you know, a little more closely on how to achieve some goals, because man, collective, the power of the collective is just so much more than you can imagine by yourself. I mean, this podcast is proof of that.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, that would be my final thought from this conversation, is just exploring your options and then just using your present assets and maximizing them by having conversations with other people and getting advice. Mm-hmm. And final thoughts, Darius J. I'm ready.
I got that little part out, man.
We've already lost our rating, our family rating.
We already did it. You already did it. Go, hey, well, you know, don't go crazy. People don't know.
Yeah, I ain't gonna go crazy. I would say things that I've taken away is just like learn, educate yourself. You know what I'm saying? Be aware, because even just like Aquania said earlier, it's just like, hey, you can start from wherever you at. Even if you're working a job, you ain't got to be Instagram rich, like a lot of people you see on Instagram saying, quit your job, start a business. But you might not be a business person. So don't do what they said, because if you ain't got the gusto to do it, because from what my friends that I know that are in business, you got to have some, you got to have heart. If you ain't got heart, it won't work for you, or you got to have the sense to do it. You know what I'm saying? But just starting somewhere, you know what I'm saying? Because it's, even for me, it's just making me think like, oh man, I really need to start crunching my numbers, you know what I'm saying, to make sure everything got an assignment and it got a place, you know what I'm saying? And yeah, it's just been, I don't know, this one made me, I wish I knew how to budget as good as my wife. My wife, she can really budget. She didn't do sales spreadsheets and stuff like that. I just, it ain't my thing. I'm just like, nah, I make this much money, and as long as I'm not spending all of it, I'm in a good place. You know, but just even just learning how to, you know what I'm saying, invest in the Roth IRAs and stuff like that, and doing what you can wherever you at. Mm-hmm. 401ks, it's never too late. There's a lot of things that have been spoken in our communities for us with how you can accumulate wealth, or even ways to do it, because everybody think you just got to ball out. That's the only way you're going to accumulate wealth. But, you know, everybody is not going to be a millionaire, which, you know what I'm saying, in the sense that the track that people say you can, like through sports, music, whatever, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people you see, that's not your way. But just being the everyday person, you can become one as well. Just like she said, like 401ks, Roth IRAs, those are all very attainable things that we can attain. And It's just time to get started doing it and find your way to the place where you can retire. Because I don't want to retire when I'm 75. I don't want to be working at Walmart. Like, hey, man, y'all want some bread? You know what I'm saying? If anything, I want to go to Walmart and just chunk some bread at somebody and run out the door and be like, hey, I'm retired. That's my right. Cause trouble in a store. I came in here to complain about your soup. It's too hot. And I want a refund.
Let me know where you retire so I can go somewhere else.
Yeah. That could have gone way worse. So I'm,
oh my gosh.
Oh. Oh man. So this has been Conversate.
We talked about it.
We talked about it, guys.
We have our final show of the season coming up.
Yeah.
Final show of the season. It will be the finale. October 17th. We'll tell you who is the guest tomorrow.
Oh, okay, cool. So no drumsticks. Yeah.
No drum. Oh, you had the drum.
Yeah. How about this? She had them ready. She was looking at it. She was just like, oh, yeah, we about to go.
I thought you were doing peace out on some, like, the double piece. I didn't think you were.
It's okay. You'll be utilized one day.
Oh, well, it won't, because then it's the finale. So
I know.
So no.
I'll utilize them for something else.
Ah. That's the spirit.
That's just when she's chopping up, you know, she used those fingers to hold the money that she's going to count from her investment property.
Yeah. See, I like the way you're thinking there.
You know what I'm saying? Up here. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. That's thinking on your feet.
Exactly. We're going to be able to count. I want a vault like Scrooge McDuck. I always dreamed as a kid that I was going to be like Scrooge McDuck. I'm just jumping the vault, swim through some gold. And you know what I'm saying?
You know that's not how the physics of coins work.
I know, like but
probably, you know, break your neck and die.
You probably could, but if I could own an anti-gravity vault, you know what I'm saying, which makes everything pretty weightless, including myself, I can swim through the coins. Wow, science.
And on that note,
we're out. See y'all later.
Peace, everybody.